binding abilities for seed oil and protein content in cotton.
So our research is kind of, you know, connected to what Dr. Campbell just said. So it'll be a lot easier to understand if you pay attention to him, because that makes my life easier. For the longest time, our improvement goals have been centered around fiber qualities, yield, and agronomic traits. And we do have potential for more. We can attempt to at least start looking at cotton as a dual-purpose crop, because think about it, for every 1 pound of cotton fiber we make, we actually make a little more amount of seed. So if we start concentrating on trying to improve that, we could get to more utility-based there. Also, we have United Nations that tells us that we're going to have a food shortage in 2050, so it doesn't hurt to have extra food. Currently, the way the West Texas economy for seed oil goes is that we have the producer who sends the fiber, the seed cotton, to the gin, and from the gin, it goes to the oil processing facility, which in this case is BICO, and then they take their, you know, they basically get the oil out, sell it, they have a cut that goes back to the gin, and from the gin, it goes back to the producer. So everybody does make a little bit of money in the process. And that's how it's currently set. What's the influence of cottonseed oil in our lives? Well, it is supposed to be heart healthy, according to the American Heart Association. That's because you know, they're giving you a guideline. They're not telling you to drink a lot of oil, but basically it fits their guideline of saturated to unsaturated fat. Which brings me to every time, what exactly is the saturated and unsaturated fat? Is that you have a harmful dietary fat, which is this one, and it tastes delicious, but it will eventually give you a heart attack. That's the point. Chemically speaking, it has a single carbon bond. So this is the chemical layout of that. Typically comes from animal resources, and I should have thought about that before I buttered my toast this morning. So if anybody saw me do that, ignore it. The healthier dietary fat is where you have a double bond with your carbon, and that's what your poly and monounsaturated fats are. You typically get it from nuts and also from plant-based oils, and cotton fits that bill. The other advantages to cotton are that it does have a high smoke point, so you can fry. And I come from India, where, you know, when I grew up, we actually ate potato chips. There's a market for potato chips where you deep fry it in cottonseed oil. And if you have never eaten a chip that's deep fried in cottonseed oil, you've never eaten a really delicious chip. So take it from a person who's eaten it. Anyway, so it also has the diversity where it's light enough where you can use it as dressing and salad oils. It does not impart its own flavor. That's probably why the chip tastes better. It's naturally hydrogenated, and then it also has a good shelf life. We have made a lot of progress in terms of improving lint, and we've seen multiple slides show this in the conference so far. But this is just a timeline of how we've progressed with fiber yield over time, and that's because we put in a lot of effort to do that. But if we go to oil, we haven't really done anything, and that's because we've never put our efforts into breeding for seed oil, for improving seed oil. And so it's kind of stagnant right here. So that brings us to improvement, and this is kind of what Dr. Campbell just talked about. There is a multi-stage process to this. And when I started working for Lori and Dr. Deaver, they had already screened, they'd surveyed the germplasm, the National Germplasm Collection, for whether or not we have diversity. We have to have the genotypic diversity before we even attempt a breeding effort. So this is a brief overview of the publication that came out a few years ago, where the survey was done for about 2,200 accessions across multiple genomes, and we estimated all in protein. Also, from Dr. Chapman did that for us. It's that same procedure that Dr. Campbell just talked about. What I do have is that we found we do have a lot of diversity, and this is just the AD genome, typical material for breeders to work with. There's sufficient diversity. That's the protein, and that's the oil on the X and Y axes. So the next step was we wanted to see a little bit, just not too in-depth, but whether or not these traits are heritable, you know, what exactly is the gene in play, genetics of this. So we published another early in 2016. We have this manuscript where we did a line by tester. We did not get an opportunity to look at protein on this, but what we did was that there were four PD type lines and four TX type testers. We found that seed oil was heritable, and we had a lot of G by E there, but we also reported pretty good heritability for narrow sense for seed oil, which is what, as breeders, is useful for us. And a conclusion from that study was that we do have sufficient additive variance to improve seed oil content. Now, after we did that experiment, we realized that we wanted to go ahead and look a little bit more in detail for seed oil and protein content. So what we're going to talk about today is our diallel mating design that we set to estimate it. And again, this study uses the same technique, it goes to Dr. Chapman's lab for oil and protein analyses. We use the Model 1 method for, so quickly, we have six parents here, six genotypes. They were all diverse for oil and protein. That's how they were selected. And this is a kind of a half diallel where you make a cross in every combination, but not the reciprocal crosses. It's a replicated trial. I have two environments that I'm presenting today. It's still preliminary. There's two more environments that are being analyzed right now. Actually, they're being tested right now, and eventually we'll have a much more bigger set of data to work with. Okay. So when I ran the ANOVA for this two environment study, what we found was that we had a G by E for oil, micronair, and elongation. And that's why we had split all of that data by location. What we do see in that is that we do have significant general combining and specific combining abilities for all traits that we tested. And we also, you know, have significant GCA effects for everything that did not have AG by E. So that's good news. That means we have good combiners here. So going by the first, so this table just talks about the traits that are having some G by E. So it's separated out by location. CS is the college station location. LVV stands for the Lubbock location. They're pretty diverse environments. We have two entries, and they're color-coded in green. The green entries are the ones that these parents were very good combiners for oil. It turned pink, but it was supposed to be red. Red is that the pink ones indicate that they basically reduced oil content. So concentrating on the stuff that actually worked for us, we have the TX109 and the Komati line. The Komati line comes from Africa. It was known for high... We surveyed it in the germplasm collection, and we had good positive oil for that. We also had decent fiber quality for that, and it turned out to be a really good combiner for oil. Now, the reason why I've highlighted the rest of the traits from HBI here are that while these two entries, they both combine well for oil, they behave very differently when they're combining for other fiber traits like micronair and elongation. So the TX line, the 109, will actually ended up increasing micronair. It also ended up contributing positively to elongation, whereas Komati also, you know, it worked for oil, but it had a completely different effect on the other traits. Something to remember. These are the traits. The protein content, length, uniformity, and strength are the traits that did not have a G by E effect in our test. What we do know is that TM1 was a positive combiner for protein. It did end up being a negative, combiner for strength, but it did not have an impact on the length and the uniformity. As far as PharmaX A32 goes, well, we did have some significant negative combining ability for protein, but it was a good combiner for length and strength. Another thing to remember was Komati was the one that contributed positively to oil. It did not contribute to Micronair. There was no significant difference there, but it also ended up improving strength. So TX109 here, we see how it's a negative combiner for strength, which was a positive combiner for oil. So not everything that does good for seed will behave the same way for fiber. It actually does change how it combines with other fiber traits. All right, so then I went in and looked at the means a little bit. These are our the t-test for our the whole test, parents and the hybrids combined. And these top three are our best oil means and then across the environment. And you can tell that it's the good news is the very first one in ranking is the TX109 cross to Komati, which are both excellent combiners for oil, and they ended up giving us a pretty good amount of seed oil content. They didn't do too bad for protein. It's right here. It's about at 24%. We don't have that much of a diversity with the protein, but it's still there. I mean, it's not all one. So we had our TX109 and Komati cross did really well for seed oil content. The other two in the ranking, they also notice they're both crosses with Texas 109, which is a good combiner for seed oil. Okay, so remember when I showed you the slide of how we progressed over time with oil? These are the averages from our ANCVD trials, and if you notice, everything is under 21%. And if you go back and look at our numbers here, we actually touch all the way to 26%. So there's a lot of potential there. And that's just kind of, these numbers are just for us to get an understanding or you know, absorb where we are and where we could, you know, focus our breeding attention to. We ran correlations on this, and it kind of goes exactly back to what Dr. Campbell just said. We have a strong negative correlation between oil and protein. This is something that we surveyed even when we did the 2,500 accessions, the 2,200 accessions for the NCGC. We had a very strong negative correlation. It's just how the seed is right now. When we look at oil, we do see positive correlations with Micronair uniformity and strength. Protein, on the other hand, is negatively correlated to uniformity and elongation. But my personal thought on this data, when I just see it, is that when we go back and look at the combiners, I don't think all of these traits are necessarily connected. The fiber traits are necessarily connected with the seed at this moment. It's just how the data is. Because what combines well for oil, we already see that it combines very differently for the other fiber traits. So given that this is just two environments, it's a smaller study, not that many data points, it probably isn't just a correlation to go with, but it's a good starting point. When I compared the correlations to what we had in our previous line by tester and the survey, we found that oil actually consistently is positively correlated to strength. Even other research in our literature review suggests that it's almost always positively correlated to strength and upper half mean length. But some of our work also suggested that it was positively correlated to uniformity. And that actually is good news for us. I did not present the agronomic traits because I did not get a chance to analyze them, but our previous study did show that we had a positive correlation with seed index and boll weight, and like Dr. Campbell said, we have a negative correlation with the lint percent and lint index. To summarize this, currently we see two potential candidates that are good combiners, so we do know that oil can be improved. Protein, well, TM1 was our only rock star, so therefore it is the best combiner, but then in the end, you know, it did contribute significantly to it. And we think that there is potential for simultaneous improvement of fiber and seed. That might be exaggerating it, but at least let's put it this way. We can improve seed without destroying the fiber, and that's probably where we want to be. Our future work is that we're actually processing more location data, environmental data, to see get a bigger picture of this stuff. We're trying to make interspecific crosses to see if we can break the linkages we see here. And then Lori's also working on some molecular marker studies to help us identify genes. Questions?
Any questions?
Okay. Yeah, well, so we talked a little bit about this, Dr. Campbell and I, because I got a chance to look at it, peek at his presentation before. We do not have G by E for protein, and keep in mind, this is just two environments, and his is a way bigger test, and this is, you know, this might change by the end of all of our environments. But we do know one thing for a fact, is that protein is highly environmentally regulated. That we know, from not just from cotton seed, but other oil seeds. So it might show, yes, Dr. Campbell. That's actually, yes, that's true. It wasn't significant. Yes, sir?
How many locations
did you test? The question was how many locations we tested. We tested two locations for this data. And there's two more environments coming in. Probably not for protein, but probably for oil, it might stay consistent.